Hello, and welcome everyone back to the 8th class in our crash course on the laws of Shabbat, the 39 prohibited categories of created labor. Tonight we will be starting with the Hatofer Shtei Tefirot, in the language of the Mishnah, sewing two stitches. So, what does it mean, sewing two stitches? It's the attaching together of two objects, or even the same object onto itself, I mean through sewing or pinning, taping, gluing, etc. Now, where did this apply in terms of the Mishkan? As from last week, those of you who may recall, we are in the order of garments, meaning we divide the Mishnah into four parts, meaning the 39 Melachot can be divided into four different sections. The section that we're dealing with now is those that were involved in the creation of the curtains that were used in the Mishkan. These curtains needed to be prepared and created. We already talked about the weaving process in the previous class. So stitching, there is a bit of machloket, it's a bit of disagreement at exactly where stitching applied. Everyone agrees it applied in terms of the curtains. The question is, was it in terms of the initial creation of the curtain, or does the curtain have to be one continuous piece, as we mentioned in the previous class, and therefore when we talk about sewing and stitching here, it is the repairing of curtains. Either way though, we learn out from the sewing that was involved in relationship to the curtains of the Mishkan, this idea of sewing two stitches being something which is forbidden on Shabbat. So what can we do, as we like to begin with? Well, we can attach buttons. In the situation here, attaching buttons is not a permanent attachment. That's number one. Number two, this is what's called derech tashmisho. It is the way in which the item is used. I mean, if you have a keli and it's used in a certain way, and that happens to be something which is connected to the concept of attach. Another example, for example, here the attaching of two buttons, even though we're attaching together two objects in a fashion that is very similar to sewing. But I'll give you another example. When we talk in the future, God willing, soon, about the concept of bone, of construction, so attaching anything to a home would not be allowed. But, or for that matter, taking something off of the home, you know, pulling it out of the wall or breaking yourself and so on, would not be allowed. But, for example, opening and closing a door, opening and closing a window would be fine because that's derech tashmisho. That's the way in which the item is used, and therefore it's not considered to be any sort of creative labor, any sort of malacha in connection with it. So here also attaching and unattaching buttons is fine. So this applies then to other things, such as using Velcro. So Velcro, opening and closing, is perfectly all right. Now, many people might think that Velcro is actually tearing. When you think about it, you hear that shh, that tearing sound when you're pulling it apart. Well, what happens is that you have all these little micro, plastic pieces that are kind of like barbed in a sense. And what they do is they stick into the material on the other side. And what you're hearing is when you're pulling it apart is you're detaching the barbs out of the material, but you're not actually ripping the material. Now, of course, after much use of Velcro strips, sometimes you'll start to see that there is some damage to the material side. But again, this is not the normal situation. I mean, it's not 100% that every time you open the Velcro you're going to be tearing. It's not intended, and you wouldn't want the results of what occurs in this situation when you're actually pulling apart the Velcro, and therefore it's not a problem here as well. Putting disposable diapers on your baby. Now, modern day disposable diapers, there is some machloket about the older style type, but today diapers are manufactured in a way where the sticky strips that hold the diaper together, they attach. Because understand, when we talk about sewing, it's really the attaching of two objects, so even taping things together would be asur. So here, though, the entire attaching process is all designed to be temporary. It's derech tashmisho. It's also a case where, in other words, it's designed to open and close and not to remain there permanently and so forth and so on. So again, there is no problem along these lines of putting on disposable diapers. The older days when you had tabs that you'd be pulling off and things like that, there were many that suggested opening and closing the tabs first, and certainly a mahmir tavol la bracha, and there's a person who is strict, is a blessing for such people. Using a safety pin, interestingly enough, most people may not realize, is in fact permitted. So a temporary fix with a max of 2 perforations guarantees that you are within the confines of that permissibility. So that means to say that if you bring the pin in through one side and out through the other side and then close it, then that's fine. And in doing so, attaching them, again, it's on this temporary basis. Now, there are those that say, though, if you're going to be doing this on a permanent basis, meaning there's never an intention to eventually mend the garment or something like that. Again, example, if, you know, a person has, guys are guys, you know, and they may end up thinking, you know, going ahead and safety pinning up their pants, and that is their idea of hemming. So that would be create a situation. That would create a problem on Shabbat. But in general, the using of safety pin in that fashion is fine. Suction cups, that, for example, the type of person might find on the bottom of a kid's bowl or things like that, which are sort of temporary in nature, those are fine. On the other hand, though, if you had a suction cup which was not designed to be used only temporary, meaning it's going to be, in other words, it's going to remain for more than 24-hour periods of suction, such as those as seen on TV hooks that a person might use, that situation, using those type of suction cups would be asur. That's again a permanent sticking of things together, and therefore not allowed. Putting on band-aids without wrapping them on themselves or to hold down gauze is also all right. In fact, that even includes opening up the packaging to the band-aid, provided you don't tear through the words, and removing the backing and sticking it onto the wound. All that is fine. The issue comes up when, if you have, for example, a little boo-boo on your finger, and you go ahead and you want to put the band-aid, and you wrap it around, and then it closes in on itself, forming a band-aid ring. That's an issue. There are some that hold that using a butterfly band-aid is also a bit of an issue. But again, a regular, standard, run-of-the-mill band-aid is not a problem. As long as, again, you're not wrapping on yourself. Well, what can't you do? Well, you can't tape a rip. You have a piece of paper that's ripped or something like that. You want to go ahead and put a piece of tape on it or something. That's a problem. Glue craft sticks together or something like that. That's an issue again. So gluing and taping, these are all included in this concept of sewing. Stapling anything together is going to be something which is a sew, which is not allowed. Pushing down tape or wallpaper that's peeling up. You may not realize, especially when you're dealing with old books, that you may have had some, thick tape on it or something in order to hold the binding together. If that tape starts to come off and you start pushing it back down, you are being over this isur. You are violating this halacha of sewing, and this is not allowed. Stick pins into a bulletin board is not going to be allowed. You know, this idea of putting it in there, it is sort of a permanent type of attachment and so forth, that's going to be an issue. Sealing envelopes, again, licking an envelope or sticking stamps or things like that, those are all things which are asur. By the way, people should know that the inside labels, the envelopes and the stamps and so forth, they use a corn starch in the liquid. So if you're allergic to corn, be careful where you stick your tongue. Anyways, HaKorea Almanat Litfor Shtei Tefirot, looking at the next of the 39 Malachot that we're dealing with, tearing in order to sew 2 stitches. So what is that? The tearing apart of any objects or objects. In other words, it's the reverse of the sewing of the 2 stitches that we just saw. So what can you do? Now, the things that we're going to talk about now in terms of permissibility, you should all know in advance that it's very important that whenever possible that you take the initiative to do the tearing and the opening before Shabbat, and not leave this onto Shabbat itself. So that means to say, certain things, though, this particular one, though, is not a problem at all, and that's tearing food. I mean, obviously, if you're going to be tearing at your piece of meat in order to stick it in your mouth, that's perfectly all right. If you have a seal on food that's keeping it fresh, that opening it before Shabbat, well, then here's another issue. But just in general, though, everything else I'm going to talk about is going to be things that, again, preferably done before Shabbat whenever possible. So tearing food wrappings you know, the loose, you know, plastic bags and saran wraps and things like that without breaking letters, whether they're the natural wrappings or not, you know, such as a banana peel versus, again, you know, a bag of potato chips. In all these situations, tearing open, opening the wrapping in order to get to the food is going to be permissible. A similar type of situation would, for example, let's say you had a package of paper plates. That would also be fine. You could destroy the plastic packaging that's holding in the those plates in order to be able to pull them out. Again, you destroy the packaging, throw it away, and now you have the paper plates, and you can make use of them for your Shabbat meals and so forth. You can use tissues even if they may break. Now, again, when a person goes ahead and he's wiping up sweat or he's blowing his nose, sometimes the tissues may come apart. The fact that this may happen sometimes, you don't want this, you don't actually don't want the results of this, you prefer that this not happen. Again, this is an unintentional form of tearing that's completely destructive. So in all of these situations, this is works out to be all right. Cutting strings without measuring is all right. So therefore, it'd be permissible to cut off a you know one of those little price tags that are attached by a plastic thingy or something along those lines, and that would be fine. You know, if you have two pairs of shoes, a set of flip-flops sitting upstairs, and they're attached by plastic, you know, little, one of those little plastic strings between them, or through a regular string or something like that, you'd be able to cut that string in order to be able to use those shoes, and that's fine. Walking over leaves and twigs, I mean, provided, of course, you're not walking over them, you know, with the intention of just, you know, trying to do this, but if you're just happen to be walking and you're breaking leaves and twigs underneath your feet and have no interest in the results of such a thing, then that's also fine. You know, even though, again, you're going to be causing them to rip apart or something else like that. Opening up a paper milk carton, you know, the old-style milk cartons that you go ahead and you pull open and so forth that are just glued together, again, that works out to be all right. Opening up a carton containing food. So if you have like a hard carton or something like that, not just a, you know, in general, you can always destroy the carton completely and then be able to access what's inside of it without a problem. But if you were to destroy the carton in order to make it into something new, some sort of display case or something for the food, that's going to be an issue because now you're creating something. Stick a straw into a juice box. That's all right. You know, the little piece of silver foil that's on there, that's just a wrapper that's preventing you from getting to the food, and again, just poking a hole through that with the little straw that it comes with, that's fine. So opening cans, according to some opinions, this is a fairly big issue. So really, wherever possible, a person should try and avoid this. You know, you open the tuna fish and prepare it before Shabbat. That sort of thing. Again, you could destroy the can, you know, putting a hole in the bottom, opening it up, and that solves more issues. So there are those that hold that even opening the can altogether, taking out the contents and discarding the can would also be all right. But again, wherever possible, a person should try and open up the cans beforehand. Same thing goes for cans of soda. If a person wants to be strict, again, he can pour out the whole contents, throw away the can, or again, wherever possible, same thing with soda bottles, things like that, just opening and preparing them before Shabbat. Now, opening the bottles, again, these soda bottles out of the plastic caps, according to many, is all right, but there are those opinions that it's not. So again, preparing and doing this before Shabbat is certainly critical here, and there's another issue, and that is very frequently sprayed across the sides of the soda bottles is the date of expiration or creation and things like that. And again, so if you're going to be opening up these cans or bottles, you're going to be tearing through these letters. So there is something to be concerned about here. And again, if a person had taken the time and had the diligence to prepare before Shabbat, then he would ensure himself of not coming into a situation where he'd be stuck with a bottle of soda he can't open because he would end up tearing through the words. You can take off diapers and dispose of them, and I highly recommend doing so once you've opened them. Unstick something stuck by mistake. Let's say, for example, you had a book or something, and a glob of food just happens to fall on it, like, or something like that. Again, and it ends up sticking things together, and they come to it the next time. It's not a problem to go ahead and break through the food seal that was created there by the stuff that fell. Again, this was a mistake. So any type of sticking that happened in a mistaken fashion, in other words, say by food or something like that, that is not considered to be the type of sticking that's an issue. Now, so for example, you know, a person has a new book, And you know, sometimes the glue from the binding may get in there and again stick things together. So separating them are fine. Now, if the pages are in fact were never cut, that's another issue. But if it's just a question of things being glued together or stuck together, then that's not a problem. The same thing, you know, if for example a book, you know, gets stuck to a table, has been sitting there for a long time, whatever, you know, with the sun beating on it, whatever. All these type of situations where it's a where again it's a sticking that was unintentional. Then that's fine. So what can't we do? Well, we can't tear or break anything, even if for a destructive purpose. In other words, even though in general, as we said, the idea of a malacha is creating something, meaning it's something that is for a creative, positive purpose, and therefore in theory totally destructive, anything that's totally destructive should be alright. Here, nevertheless, because of the nature of the malacha, even the destructive purpose would not make it permissible. You have to have other factors as well. You can't detach taped items. In other words, it's not just a question of breaking up stitching. It's, you know, anything like that. So again, pulling apart glued items is an issue. Opening envelopes is a problem. You know, you can't go through your mail and start opening up envelopes and so forth on Shabbat. Tearing toilet paper is an issue, especially on the lines. Now, if it happens that a person is stuck in a situation where he doesn't have toilet paper available, what he can do, though, is, again, use, like, say, the sides of his hands or something like that to make it, in other words, not the normal way of tearing, and just sort of pull apart, but not, again, not on the perforations of the toilet paper, but on the paper in between. And go ahead and again just cut that paper and then make use of that toilet paper. Again, if you're in a stuck situation, there's a matter of something called cover the briot, a certain honor that is important for, again, for being human and a certain amount of dignity that is crucial. And therefore, the Rabbanim did not create any sort of gzera in the face of that. So, but again, wherever possible, a person should either pre-tear toilet paper, use specially prepared, already cut perforated toilet paper, Kleenex and things like that. You certainly, before using them, you might want to speak to the owner of the house if it's not your and you're not the owner. And the reason for that is that Kleenex does not dissolve in the water the way toilet paper does. In other words, when you put toilet paper into a toilet bowl and you flush, what happens is, as a matter of very little time, the toilet paper begins to dissolve in the water, and therefore it will not obstruct the sewage pipes and so forth. The Kleenex, on the other hand, though, is designed to be rugged and to not dissolve very quickly in any liquids. And for that reason, if you happen to have any sort of problems in the piping in a home, the Kleenex can very easily get stuck and begin to create a buildup and create very serious problems in terms of drainage in the home. So therefore, if it's not your home, you really do want to find out for sure whether or not they have such issues. But if a person is in a situation where they are using Kleenex, flushing one at a time usually will not create any major issues. But just again, so this way, again, when it's one at a time, there's the chances of it creating any kind of buildup. But again, a bunch of Kleenex, five or six of them together, flushed down a toilet, can very easily clog even good solid pipes. So certain to keep in mind. But so again, better to have the situation where you have pre-cut toilet paper, something else along those lines. Removing labels is an issue. You know, the labels that are sewed on, what we talked about before, were the kind that were, you know, stuck on by a little plastic string or something. But those that are sewed right onto the garment or something along those lines, that is not allowed to be removed. Okay, going on to the next malacha, hatzad tzvi, capturing or trapping a deer, which is the language that's used in the Mishnah. Again, remember, all of these things are categories, and the not necessarily the name is reflective of everything. So it's not just the capturing or trapping using a trap. In other words, using some sort of physical device or even your arms, but it's the intentional confinement of any living creature to a space that would make it relatively easier to grab. And that even includes doing something or scaring an animal into a corner or into some direction in order to bring that about. So, for example, so this is something, like I said, this is an issue. Anyways, what can you do? Well, you can close the door to your room if there happens to be a fly in it. I mean, if you're in a room and it's a fairly big room, closing the room and the fly there, it's not going to make it any easier for you to be able to get to that fly. And the fly is a pretty roomy place. He could probably spend his whole life enjoying the neighborhood of your room and making all kinds of little baby, you know, maggot flies and all that kind of stuff, and everything's wonderful. So he's not trapped, he's just hunky-dory. So that's not a problem. Now, even for example, though, trapping a fly in a smaller space, but in the situation where you just happen to have a opening where the fly could get out, now I'm not talking about some kind of complex maze that will require intelligence to get out of, but if you happen to, you know, go ahead and, for example, capture a fly in between your screen and your, you know, your windows or something like that, as long as there's a hole or some way for the fly to get out, if it chose to, then that's fine. So again, not a problem. Closing the door of your house, or bringing into your closed room your long-time pet dog. Now, I say a long-time pet dog is because, again, he's comfortable, he's there, he's not trying to get away. He's considered to be already captured, meaning he is part and parcel of your home and everything that's in it, and therefore, if the fact that you open or close the door of your home isn't going to be considered capturing that animal, because he'd be there anyways. He's not going anyplace. He's at home. This is his house. So in a situation like that's fine. If you happen to have a new dog, you are planning to get a pet, you certainly should speak to your rabbi before considering doing that. There are certainly ramifications of having animals in your home that you may want to speak to your rabbi to begin with. There's certainly a large number of responsibilities that you must take into account. But also, the initial stages of taming the animal within your home create some real serious problems for Shabbat in terms of just opening and closing the door when you have an animal that doesn't want to be there. Could be considered trapping. So this is a real concern, and again, so a person should go seek out a rav and speak to them before looking into taking into their house a new animal. So what can't you do? Well, you cannot convince or instigate an animal to go into a confined area even without touching, as we said before. You know, just making faces at some animal and jumping up and down and convincing it to go and to get cornered into some place, that is still trapping from a halachic perspective. You can't put a container fly, you know, it's running around this and that. You just go ahead and grab it and just shove something over it. That's a problem. You cannot, you know, let's say, for example, that you had a fly in your room and then you start again closing off, you know, and making smaller and smaller spaces in that room until it gets confined into a smaller and smaller place. You know, there are different statuses in terms of what's considered captured. There is a rabbinical status, and then there's a Torah status. You know, so if you first bring it to a place where it now becomes much easier to grab, and then now you bring it to a place where it's very easy to grab, that change in space, again, I'm being somewhat vague, there's a lot of details involved here, and if somebody is involved in caring for a farm or for animals on a regular basis, certainly speak to a rav about this. But the point is that just, again, confining into smaller spaces from where they were before, even if they were already corralled, could still end up being an issue here. Picking up a sick or wild animal, is also, even though the animal is sick there and is not readily moving, but as soon as you pick it up, in fact, you're capturing it. Now, I also understand, of course, that all animals are mukse, so if you have even a pet animal, you can't be picking up your dogs and cats on Shabbat. There are halachic issues with this. You do, though, by the way, have to feed all your pets, and you certainly need to walk your dogs in order to allow them to relieve themselves and things like that. And this is an obligation that you have by taking in that animal. Again, so chasing a wild animal until it collapses is also an issue. In other words, as a result of running after that animal to the point that the animal becomes so tired it collapses, that's considered to be a form of capturing it. Going on to the next malacha, which in a sense is kind of connected to this, you know, and that's the slaughtering, the killing or causing the bleeding, even internal, meaning even if no blood comes out, of any living thing, regardless of how. That means to say that if you suffocate it, you beat it, you shoot it, whatever it is, any form of causing blood to be brought to the surface of the skin, and all the more so penetrating out, and of course killing an animal, or you know, any, of course, all this applies to humans as much as to animals. All of these things is completely and totally not allowed. It also includes not just animals, things like bugs are included in this, living fish, so forth and so on. All this would not be allowed on Shabbat. So what can you do? Well, interestingly enough, you can kill lice that, you know, if God forbid you happen to be suffering from such a thing where you've got lice in your hair, by putting on a liquid ointment. Again, if it's a thick ointment, there may be other issues, but again, like a liquid ointment onto your hair and killing it is fine. And the reason for that is that lice are not considered to be distinguishly different than dirt. As funny as that sounds. Because of the fact that they live their entire life, you know, sitting in, you know, in your hair and, you know, in your dead skin particles and all this sort of thing, and again with these, you know, microscopic eggs and all this sort of thing, they gain a status of not being considered to be something which is distinctly alive and separate from the from all of these things. It's, so, given that's the case, a person killing them, you know, on, you know, again, by putting some sort of salve in his hair is going to, it's actually permissible. A person would also be allowed to remove splinters, and the reason is, you're not always going to bleed, and you try, and of course, you don't make yourself bleed doing that, but going ahead and removing something which has lodged itself in the skin, which is, of course, very uncomfortable, possibly, God forbid, could become infected, things like that, it is permissible to remove them on Shabbat. Again, a person should care as much as possible to avoid bleeding where possible. Well, what can't you do? Well, you can't flush an insect. In fact, you can't even throw an insect into your toilet bowl just so that he sits there and drowns and so forth and so on. That is not permissible. You can't step on bugs. That's not allowed. You can't even spray poisons into your house. This is an issue. Now, obviously, if we're talking about a situation where somebody in your house is allergic to something, and there's now a life-threatening situation, we live by the Torah, and therefore whatever needs to be done can be done. Capturing is preferable, to, in this case, to say killing it or whatever, but whatever can, needs to be done can be done. You know, where possible, if there's a way to push it to the ground and just sort of walk over it and cause its death as you pass by, you know, all these things are fine. But again, where possible... again, unless it's something that you know is poison, just again, a moth comes into your house is, and your wife is screaming, is not grounds to all of a sudden to snuff out the life of this poor moth just because of that. Again, it's something to take into mind and into consideration. You can't cause yourself or anyone else to bleed. Now, not just bleeding, even bringing up blood to the surface, as we said. So you can't scratch somebody. You can't hit them hard enough that they're going to turn red. You can't bite them till they, even if you don't penetrate the skin, giving, you know, sucking on their skin until it creates a red mark is not going to be allowed. You know, again, so all of these things are things that again a person who's giving is what do they call the you know rope burns and all these prank type things. These are all not allowed. Pulling out a loose tooth on Shabbat, again, a person if it falls out is one thing, but it's a person shouldn't be playing with a loose tooth, you know, as the kids and so forth and whatever. It's an issue again because you're causing bleeding and this is something which is not allowed. That means to say, a person, for example, wouldn't be allowed to use like a hard bristle brush in his mouth or something that your nose is for sure going to cause, you know, blood to come out and things like that. Same problems. And of course, you can't cause someone else to have a bruise. You know, giving somebody a whack on his arm or something and causing a black and blue mark is a violation of this law and is not allowed. So this last law for this evening is v'ham mafshito, the language of the Mishnah, in other words, and flaying and skinning that animal. By the way, as I should have mentioned before, starting with slaughtering, we've actually now entered, actually capturing already, we've now entered into another section, meaning the third section of the laws connected with the Mishnah, so they were divided into four orders. This is the order of preparing skins. Now, in the Mishkan, there was used for it was something called the tahash, which was an animal. Some people believe the unicorn, maybe the narwhal, whatever it is. But there was a certain animal that had very beautiful skin that they would capture, slaughter, and then now, as we're about to talk about, flaying and skin and so and prepare this, go through the process of preparing the skins in order to be used as coverings in the Mishkan. So again, so all of this order deals with the preparations of hides in connection with that. So in this case, again, we've already talked about the capturing of that animal, and we've talked about the slaughtering of that animal. The next step in terms of preparing the hides, you have to remove the skin. So therefore, flaying or skinning an animal is not allowed. Now, what is this exactly? It's removing the skin off of any uncooked animal. That means to say that if the animal is raw on Shabbat, raw chicken, raw fish, so for making sushi on Shabbat could potentially be an issue. Again, these would create problems. In other words, but if it's already cooked, the cooking process itself is considered to have already caused the separation, and therefore there's no issue. And again, to taking off the skin, you want to save the calories and not eat the fat and so forth of the skin of the chicken, you know, whatever. This is fine and not a problem on Shabbat itself. And with that, God willing, for this evening, we wrap up the laws of Shabbat, Bezat Hashem, God willing, with each and every one of our continued efforts to improve on our service of Shabbat. We will see Mashiach Tzidkenu, Bimra Biminu, Amen.